Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Comic-Con Stars. The No Zombies here tonight. It's a live crew already. Dr. John, and we've got some great guests lined up here, and the panel is here. First of all, I want to say good evening to the one and only Papa Strohmeister. How are you doing?
Fabulous. Blessed to be here with you all.
We're glad to have you here. How's Dorothy doing?
Oh, she's doing great. She's just getting over the cosplay contest at Florence Comic Con this past weekend. It was such a blast. We had a great time. Thanks to everybody having us.
It was great. So
rock and roll.
Greg Bo Watson, how you doing?
I'm recovering from Florence Comic Con myself and getting ready for Spartan Con this weekend. So working away
like
as always.
That is exactly right. How is the Crippler doing?
Crippler's doing great. He's getting ready for a big match this weekend at the Wahoo McDaniel Classic in Spartanburg, South Carolina.
Oh, that'll be fun. Wish we were there. Now, Dave Atwell, I just took my blood pressure medicine, so I'm ready for anything you're going to sling at me tonight. How are you doing?
You should dig a deeper hole. That's all I'll tell you. No, everything's going fantastic here. Everybody's talking about being worn out for cons. I'm being worn out from slinging hash. I got to go find a better day job. But outside of that, I am doing wonderful. Thankful that we did not get the worst of the weather out there. Heart goes out to everybody in Florida, though, who got a raw deal on all that. But, yeah, everything's going good. I'm about ready to leave the workplace. So I go home and get more involved in the conversation. And let's have a good evening. I'm looking forward. We got a really, really good guest on here tonight. I think we're going to have a great show. No pressure.
Well,
that's
Tony
right.
Tiger would say it's not good. It's great guest.
It is. So now, Dave, just so that you'll know, I've been pulling everyone's legs. Tonight we have Bigfoot and Anna Nicole on.
Yeah.
What do you think about that, Dave?
Yeah. Yeah, I want you to know I believe you.
I had to do that. I've got a practical joke I'm going to pull on you soon enough. So after all
you
your
have any glow sticks,
you'll be surprised. You just watch. No, actually, we don't. I mean, I hope you don't have Anna Nicole.
If Bigfoot comes out of your garage can and says cookies, I would so pop. I really would.
That would be
absolutely
great.
Absolutely. No, anyway, no Anna Nicole, no Bigfoot.
Where Bigfoot pops out of it.
Yeah, we'll work on that.
I remember eating Bigfoot cereal one time. Remember Bigfoot cereal when it came out?
Oh, yeah.
I forgot
about
the bomb.
That was good. That was good stuff.
It was good.
I ate a few Anna Nicole's along there with some Bigfoots. Yeah, it was great. Delicious.
Okay.
Anna Nicole would only date Bigfoot if he was 80.
That's right. She must have been a marshmallow kind of cereal. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's be
cereal
too soon.
Back.
You know, like Lucky Charms, green clovers, and blue diamonds.
That's right. Well, I want to say that tonight we are very fortunate to have. This is one of the few occasions when we all know each other. We're all good friends. We all go to Comic Cons together, and I want to present to everybody the one and only Ronald Rossman. And we're glad to have you here. How are you doing tonight?
It's an honor to be here. I don't know if I can live up to that announcement. So I'm doing
Big
fine.
Ron.
How are you guys doing?
That's right.
I am recovering from back-to-back cons. I did SuperCon on Saturday and the amazing Florence Con on Sunday, so I'm still licking my wounds from that.
Now, which con did you do on Saturday?
We did SuperCon in Monroe. It was a library con. It was a lot of fun. I did that with Sean Tompkins and Al Bigley. And then left from there to head down to Florence Con. So it was really cool to do back-to-back like that.
Gotcha. Well, that sounds like fun. Maybe we'll have to hit Monroe Supercon up next year. The people down there are really pretty nice. I remember when I used to announce wrestling over there, and they were always some of the best fans. But anyway, Ron, we're glad to have you here. You are the executive producer and creative mind behind the award-winning internet series Dust. And so one reason I wanted you on here is I wanted you to, first of all, give us a not so thumbnail sketch of what the series is, what it's about, how have you gone about putting it together? Because a lot of people, if they don't go to Comic Cons regularly and go meet you, they don't really know the story behind Dusk. So give us a rundown. Tell us what's going on with Dusk so far.
Well, so Dusk was a novel series I was working on, and after self-publishing two novels and running out of money, I wanted to do something with it and got together with a couple of my cosplay friends and, hey, let's do this really crazy thing. Let's film it live on Facebook because no one else is doing that. And I'll write a script for 14 episodes in 2 months and no pressure. And then we'll film it live with zero budget and the most base camera equipment we could find. And 14 episodes later, we have a 4K camera. We've got a brand new sound system, and we're working on season two. So, and we just submitted the series. We submitted to Netflix. We got rejected, which I expected, but we just submitted to Adult Swim. So we're waiting to hear back from them, hoping they might pick us up and go national with us. So we'll see.
That's all sweet.
So,
that's so cool.
Yeah, that is great. You talked about filming the thing live on Facebook. You are bringing up some history there. Alfred Hitchcock, in his frankly, the first direct unedited film was actually Coconuts by the Marx Brothers. That was in 1928. They were running that on Broadway. So at night, they would film piece by piece. Coconuts. Editing was really not a thing back then, so they hoped for the best.
Yeah.
And they did a great job. And then Alfred Hitchcock, in 1944, filmed the famous movie Rope, which he did in 10 to 12 minute segments, unedited. And if something went wrong, they had to go back and redo the entire thing. But he was going to get basically a Broadway production on film. And you're following in the footsteps of the great Marx Brothers, the great Alfred Hitchcock, Jimmy Stewart, and that whole crowd. So I think that's a wonderful thing. Now, how often have you been running Dusk as a Facebook Live? Were you doing it every week, every other week? How about that?
No, we had an episodic schedule. We couldn't do it every week because, like I said, most of our players are cosplayers. So they have their own cons and events going to. So we had a schedule, and we posted that on the site so people knew what episodes we would send out information and blast it out. We did a total of 14, like I said. It's very difficult as a director to do that because you do the rehearsals. We did the rehearsals for 6 or 7 hours. We go live, and I sit in a little room with my headset on and pray to God that everything's going to go well. And in 14 episodes, it pretty much has. I've got a couple extra gray hairs. But, you know, you were mentioning Alfred Hitchcock, who's one of my favorite directors, Frank Capra, Alfred Hitchcock. But what really inspired this, believe it or not, was Orson Welles, because one of my favorite novels is War of the Worlds.
Oh, yes.
And when Welles did his production, fooled everybody, and they've redone it and tried to kind of reboot it a couple times. It was just so ingenious that it was something that was so groundbreaking that it can't be really copied. And I thought, well, if we do something on Facebook Live like this, we're blazing a trail for other directors we're moving all the mistakes out of the way, all the twigs, all the rocks, so they don't trip on the path. And maybe, just maybe, when we look back, we'll say, hey, listen, we were able to make it easier for someone else to make their series. So we've had a lot of fun. It's been frustrating. It's been hair pulling, but it's been incredible. And to be able to look back and know that we've completed a full season and be proud of what we've done, it's pretty incredible. It's a bit surreal, you know.
That's amazing.
Exactly.
I'm a huge Orson Welles fan.
It really is. It really is.
Thank you.
Papa Stroh, you and I joke about Matt Man, but Matt Man. that great story from the Pacific Northwest NWA. That was live. Have you ever done any wrestling truly live, maybe 7-second delay on television?
Oh my gosh! What haven't I done? Oh my geez! I've done live, you know, before there was any CGI and editing and all that, and so I mean you have to get it right. If not, then it is what it is, you know, as far as live television goes. But I mean, and then I've also done the thing deal with, you know, the live television with, you know, with the delay and all that too. So, yeah, I mean, to follow in the footsteps of like a Wells and so forth that didn't have the luxuries like we do now of editing and putting and splicing and putting everything together into a film or a theatrical series. And so forth. I mean, my hat's off to them because that it takes a lot of work to put that all together. My hat's off to you, Ron, and all you guys for, you know, all the hard work you guys do.
Absolutely.
I appreciate
it. That's right.
I appreciate it. And I got to give credit to my cast. They're the ones that make it happen. They're doing this volunteer. They're not getting. I give them food, and that's pretty much it. So they're working for food. But I wanna just real quickly give a shout out to the main guy behind this, Tyler Suggs, who is our director of photography and editor. His career has just exploded. He's now on Fox 46 helping them out. He's doing ESPN Radio, and he's got several independent films out. And his last film, Vessel, was nominated for 8 awards and won Best Sound at the Independent Horror Movie Awards. So when you've got talent like that backing you up, you know you're gonna have success.
Really cool.
Well, that's great. Well, I tell you what, and we need to, if he's got films out that are good, we need to talk to him. We're going to have, of course, the main stage at Charlotte Crypticon, but we're going to have a smaller room on the other side. We're going to show at least one film, which is the Carrington event. But if he has a film he'd like to bring and show that has gone through that process, we'd love to do that. So, Ron, if you have a chance, tell Tyler to get up with me, and we'd love to have him show in that smaller room, show one of his films, and you know, be make sure that we give him credit for what he's done.
Yeah, he's got his Emmys for Mommy, which is now was nominated for the and a finalist for the Creeper Awards. He's gonna. I'm hoping he'll bring that with him because that's. I've seen Emmys for Mommy, and it's one of the coolest. It takes you back to the feeling that we all had during the original Alien, that claustrophobic, never know what's gonna happen, you know, feel. So he's. I don't want to oversell this, but to me, he's the next J.J. Abrams. He really is. He's got that kind of vision, that kind of creativity. So it's, you know, when you're surrounded by great people like you and Rob and Greg Bowe. And now, and the cast I've got for Dusk, you're going to succeed. If you surround yourself with the right people, that's the key to life. And if you're willing to pay it forward and you're willing to be as giving and selfless as they are to you, it's just all good. It's just all good.
Well, amen. And I'll say this live on the air, and I've said this millions of times, public and private. You know, Ron really deserves this success because I've always said he's one of the nicest, most humblest people I know.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much. That means a lot. That means a lot.
No
so,
doubt.
I'm honored, not to make this a kumbaya moment, but I'm honored to be a part of this group because it's nice to be surrounded by such talent, such creativity, and risk takers who are willing to put it all on the line for their art and for their creativity and do it with integrity. So that's the biggest thing. You know, finding people with integrity is so hard. And Greg Bowe, you know how I feel about you. You're one of the when we met, that's the first thing I knew about you. You had this great integrity and this amazing talent and such humility. And then meeting Rob and John and seeing that same thing, it's really cool to be part of this. So I can't thank you guys enough for bringing me into your circle
and
letting me participate in this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's
what we talk about all the time is shared success, man. For you is a win for me, and a win for him is a win for us. And as long as the egos stay out in the yard and the creativity and the genuine care for each other stays inside, nothing can beat you. Nothing.
That's
absolutely
right.
Absolutely.
You know, with all our talents, you know, we're all intertwined. You know what I mean? You know, one can't function without the other. So, I mean, we're all in this together. So, I mean, you know,
absolutely.
We need each other.
Yeah. Yeah, and it protects from the it protects you from the guys out there who are trying to take advantage, because you've got that circle,
right.
You've got that you know, and that keeps you from those people come in who see, you know, good-hearted people and want to immediately take advantage of it. And I've been through it. 2016-17 was the worst 2 years of my life of being hit with from every side, taken advantage of. So it's good to be around people that I know I can trust and sheltered from that.
We feel you, brother.
So.
We so feel you.
That's the truth.
So I just stick to work the autumn, and that's done.
2016 was just, yeah. There ought to be a way we could erase that total year from history, because I think there's only like two people that I know actually made it through 2016 with half a smile on their face. I don't know what it was about that year, but if there was a year to get a bad kidney, it was 2016.
Yeah. I actually, you
I
say
like
that,
I,
funny
I
Dave.
I ran over a bunch of Bigfoots in 2016.
I passed four kidney stones in 2016, so what you just said is very relevant.
That's bad, right?
Yeah. So, it's coming out every end, so it was fun.
But I will tell
lost,
you, it's that same camaraderie, it's that
too.
Same togetherness that are making these cons so exciting that we keep teaming up and going to. Not only is the excitement there from a personal level, but you can also feel the excitement from a team level and how we all go there. And, the people that attend could feel that family kind of attitude coming from us. And to be honest with you, I'm telling you, it's infectious. I think we're just now scratching the surface of what all we can do. And unlike a lot of other people who have quote unquote made it and fought their way into the system or was born into the system or what have you, we fought our way in there. And
that's
as many times I talk about the mile of broken glass we have to crawl through, I cherish every scar I got.
Yeah. Sometimes I feel like Bruce Willis. So I'm waiting on Hans. Where's Hans?
Have a few laughs. Have a few laughs. Come on, Hans.
Sometimes I feel like Hans dropping out that window, but sometimes I'm Hans. So.
Listen, Ron, I'm going to jump in, and I'm going to ask you, if you would, tell us a little bit about the storyline behind Dusk, if you would, please.
Absolutely, I appreciate you asking. So, Dusk is the story of a vampire family or organization that has made a treaty with humanity in order to keep from attacking them, making them extinct. Basically, humanity has allowed vampires to run organized crime. So gambling, prostitution, drugs, guns, all that runs to the vampire families. They run all syndicate crime, all organized crime. And so this agency, Majestic, keeps this treaty alive. In the process of that, there is a witch named Mal who's investigating a crime for Majestic, and in the process realizes that an ancient evil has been awoken. And as she's trying to find out how to explore the evil and defeat the evil, she finds out she has a past she never knew about, and that past could threaten all of humanity. So it's got several storylines running. We address vampires, werewolves, witches, angels. Some areas we stick very close to lore. Others we do a bit of a reboot. There's no sparkling vampires. There's none of that. So thankfully, no sparkling vampires. I really wanted to find a kid who looked like Edmund and like just have like one of our characters just kill him on sight, just like
Ralph
in the background.
Back.
Yeah, just to launch
it
off correctly.
Can Dorothy do
it? Yeah, we need to have Dorothy in the series. I actually would love to have. I'm serious, Rob. I like to do in one of the scenes. I like to have just Dorothy sitting in the background. When Mal's there, because Megan is terrified of dolls, And just to have her act with Dorothy
man.
Sitting there watching would be great. We could make
That'd
be Dorothy
awesome.
A production assistant.
But classic.
What's really unique about this, and this is where Tyler is a genius. We were trying to figure out how are we going to do this live because the POV thing's been done to death. So the actual camera is one of the characters. It's an angel called Kronos. And mankind
nice.
Has told God to sit out. So God is no longer intervening, so that's why all these nocturnes and immortal creatures are running around amok amok. And so Kronos is kind of watching what's going on for God. So the actual camera is a character, and that kind of makes
nice.
It feel like the audience is participating, and that it goes beyond just that view, that voyeurism, to another level. So it really worked out well, and it kind of makes you understand why the camera does certain angles and goes certain ways, because he's trying to keep everything watched and monitored. So.
You know, the irony of that storyline, just the sheer irony of what you just said. I mean, you could take a look around you right now, and it's like you wonder if that's not going on right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I wrote the story 10 years ago, which really is bad. It's like I feel like now
wow.
I'm one of those sci-fi writers that is, you know, all those sci-fi writers that actually could prophesy what's going on. But yeah, it's a lot of it is a reflection. It's a little bit of political satire, and as the seasons go on, you'll see that in the way that the government just allows this to happen, has no problem with it because in their mind it's greater good. And so I think that's the way the government reacts. It's willing to sacrifice because of its own ideology of what the greater good is. And a lot of times that greater good isn't what's really a greater good. It's greater good for them, you know, when people are struggling without health care, but our senators have the best health care on the planet. That's a problem. So it's going to address that. It's going to address, as a Christian, I'm addressing a lot of taboos because I'm not afraid. I believe that if you challenge your faith and your faith is weakened and you didn't have any faith at all. So I challenge a lot of stigmas and doctrines to let people know that, you know, what happens if God would sit out? What happens if we were left to our own druthers? What would that look like? And it's not a pretty picture. It's not a pretty picture. So.
Mm-mm.
Ron,
it really makes you think.
I've got an idea for you, because you need to make me an emissary for President Trump, because President Trump has a habit of signing off or getting us out of certain deals. So you might want to have President Trump through me, maybe try to alter this deal.
Is
yeah.
President Trump coming in with a siren?
Yeah, it would be huge. It would be if you did that, John. It would be huge. It would be huge.
I thought that was Greg Bowe's ride show on showing up.
Well, you know, my ride shows up every once in a while. That was the big one coming up here to protest you, Dave.
Oh, man.
I was wondering why Greg Bowe's theme song was the Bad Boys theme song. I was trying to figure out why that was. So.
So, well, you know, my nickname is International Hooligan. Hey, John.
Remember, if it's red lights, you're hurt. If it's yellow lights, you're broke down. If it's blue lights, you're going to be broke down.
Yeah.
That's right.
That's
something
right.
up.
Oh, my God.
Hey, John.
Yeah. Oh, hey, Justin. How you doing?
I'm doing good. I have a question for Ron Rossman. Can I ask you, please? May I?
Sure. Be glad for you to.
Hey, Mr. Rossman. It's Justin. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing awesome. Now as you were saying that the story was a premise. Are you gonna have that incorporated into the TV show also?
Yeah, that'll be explored in season two. That's where we're gonna introduce the lead vampire Alexander, played by Hamilton Thomas. He's a Thor cosplayer. He actually looks like Chris Hemsworth. He's amazing. I wish he would do more with Marvel. We introduced Alexander and start introducing the whole idea of this kind of conspiracy. This season is going to have a lot more action. We had to test the waters the first season. We couldn't do as much action. I know that disappointed some fans, but I had to make sure safety came first, and we had to make sure we had the right people in place to choreograph that. we now have two stunt choreographers, so you're going to see a lot more action, a lot more delving into that story. So, and I hope you guys will enjoy it.
And we're trying to get season one of Dusk at. I want to
so right now
season one.
Yeah, so you can watch the live episodes on the Facebook page. If you go to the video tab, you can watch all 13. We're going to have a DVD released on October 31st. DVD will have both the live versions and a feature-length version that'll have soundtrack and sound effects and special effects, and it'll be the clean version with also director commentary and actors' commentaries. We'll have gag reels, all that. That'll be going live on the site for pre-sale October 14th, and then it will be out to sell on October 31st. But we are pre-selling copies at CryptoCon on October 1st. You can buy your copy, and you don't pay shipping, and you also get a free print. You get a chance to win our banner from Season 1 that's autographed, and also you get exclusive online footage, including the first peek at Episode 1 of Season 2.
Oh, nice.
Nice.
Definitely I'll purchase my Season 1 then. Got to get it.
You can pre-buy it at CryptoCon, or you could buy it online October 14th.
Okay. I've been
thank
a big
you for asking
fan.
That,
I've been a, of course, I've been a big fan of your TV show Dusk. What caught on to me was when I saw it at the Comic-Con at a theme park, and I was like, this show is gonna be a hit, and it's awesome, and I love it. It's great.
Oh,
hey, great work. Keep
that
it up.
Means a lot. That means
hey,
a lot.
Keep up
the
great
it
work,
really
man.
Does.
Oh yeah.
Thank you, sir.
You're very welcome, my man.
Absolutely. So, Ron, tell us a little bit. How did you get in? You got involved in all of this because you were an expert cosplayer. Tell us a little bit about that part of your life. You're still an expert cosplayer now.
Expert loosely.
Yes, he is.
So what happened was it's a very interesting story. I started cosplaying at a young age for Halloween, and I loved to cosplay more than that, but growing up in a Christian home and back in the 80s, late 70s, early 80s, it was not there's a lot of stigma to it. You know, at that time, fandom didn't have the power it does today, so I was repressing a lot of that. It was only when I became an adult, and it was I was at an event. Someone asked me to do Batman for a birthday party, and so I bought a costume and I showed up, and it was as Donald Trump said, huge. It was huge. And
cool.
So I said to myself, I could do something with this. So I started doing charity events, and I started doing Jack Sparrow, Batman. I did Spider-Man for a short time until I saw myself in the mirror and said, yeah, I need a definite different body for this. Lycra and spandex is very unforgiving. That's why I like wearing leather. It just grew into something big. And then I started developing the voice, and it just that's the voice just comes. I put the cowl on, I'm in the voice, and I can't get out of the voice until I take the cowl off, and usually it takes about 30 minutes for me to get the voice off, which really is a thrill for my wife. There's nothing like, you know, get the big money when you're, you know, here, you know. So and that's yeah. So
it is pretty awesome.
I have a lot of fun doing it. I did an interview for a cosplay magazine that's going to be out in January, and the guy said to me, and that really threw me off. He said, "Who is the real Ron? Is it the guy in the cowl or the guy outside the cowl?" And the real Ron is the guy in the cowl. Just like Bruce Wayne, Batman is who Bruce Wayne really is. When I'm in that costume, I'm everything I want to be as a person. I'm making kids happy. I'm making adults happy. I'm representing, you know, hope for people. I'm taking them out of their misery for a moment so they can kind of see their hero. And by trying to embody the hero 100% wholly with heart, spirit, soul, and mind, I really want to kind of leave an imprint with people. And Batman is a symbol. He's taken his darkness and made it something good and something productive. And that's, you know, what I want to do with my life. So
that's a great thought.
That's great, man.
Awesome. That's cool. Yep.
And the true story, and I haven't shared this with any people, is Michael Keaton saved my life. when I was a young man, I was abused and both exterior and interior. Won't go into detail. And I had actually spent the night at a friend's house, and the next day I was going to commit suicide. No one knew. People who don't really commit suicide don't make a big deal about it. So I was doing my last hurrah, and I wanted to go see Batman, and I wanted to see the premiere. So I went with a friend of mine, David Hartman, and went to Queen Park Cinema. And I saw Batman, and I'm sitting there knowing that this was my last night. And I saw Michael Keaton on the screen, this normal guy playing Batman. And for some reason that clicked. And all of a sudden I heard this voice in my head that said, Ron, no one's going to save you. You're going to have to be your own hero. There's no knight in white shining armor. There's no one's going to swoop down. You're going to have to be your own hero. And that kept running through my mind. And when we got back to the house and I was sitting staring at the ceiling with my eyes open, it just made a connection. And I said, you know what? No matter what happens to me, I'm going to rise above it. And so the cosplay plays a lot in that, because there wasn't someone there for me to step in and help me out. So I have dedicated my life to trying to be that guy, to be the guy who stands in the gap and to be a hero for someone, whether it's just in the fantasy element or if it's helping them out in some way. So through that darkness, I found some light, and that's, I think, why I'm such a big Batman fan and why Batman means so much to me.
Wow.
That's amazing. That's so amazing.
It's a heck of a story.
I hope to meet Michael Keaton one day and tell him that. I know it'll probably freak him out, but just say, dude, you saved my life. Your Batman saved my life, and he's still my favorite Batman to this day. So.
Easy. Oh, yeah, mine
easy.
Too.
And you know what's funny about Michael Keaton is that prior to him getting into the Batman thing, he was Johnny Dangerously.
Oh, I love that movie.
Remember that movie? Remember the movie Night Shift? Where he played
another great one. Another Mr. Mom.
Billy Blaze. Oh,
Mr.
my
Mom.
God.
Oh, yes.
That movie.
Yes.
When Henry Winkler hits that line about, will you shut up? Shut up. I will give you a quarter if you just shut up.
My wife has used that line many times with me.
Absolutely.
You know,
it was a great line.
And she hasn't seen the movie.
He
that's
was so
scary.
Good. You know, and
he still stole the show in the new Spider-Man movie, too, as the villain.
Yeah.
Yes.
He was Batman. He was Batman as the Falcon. And that's what I felt like. I felt
pretty
like Batman
much, right?
Had like God's your life.
Yeah.
Right. It's like the guy can't get away from anything aerial. You know, it's like bats, birds, falcons, whatever it may be.
He's amazing.
I want to see him play the Blue Falcon. That's what I want to see him play. That would be my dream. Yeah, Dynamite. That'd be awesome. Oh, my God. Life would be complete. The circle of life would be complete.
And I thought I was the only guy in the room who remembered that. I don't feel so rough now. Good therapy.
Blue Falcon was awesome. I so wanted him to grab, like, Peter Parker and go, leave my daughter alone. Swear to me. It would be awesome. I'd be like, that's great. Just totally own the Christian Bale in that stunt scene. It would be awesome.
I wish he would have. So, that'd be great.
I mean, you're Michael Keaton. Who's going to stop you? I mean, who is going to stop you?
True.
You're Michael Keaton.
Right.
That's true.
So,
yeah, nothing to lose at that point. And not to mention the fact that he has outdone George Clooney, Ben Affleck. You know, you get all these
studs
lined up.
We don't talk about George Clooney.
Yeah, jeez Louise.
who's this George Clooney you speak of?
He was all right in the Perfect Storm when he was going down on the boat, but beyond that, man, it's
like Bobby Heenan. Who?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
A tough gig.
Who?
I would watch that Adam West shark scene 100 times over.
Oh,
then
yeah.
Then watch Batman and Robin. So,
Jarko Bellis, baby.
That's the Bobby Ewing shower scene. I want to wake up and pretend that never happened. So,
Dallas reference.
Yeah, God, George Clooney.
Yeah, brutal.
But you know, he's a good example. I'm getting at. I'm not saying the guy doesn't have talent. That's not my point. Is that the guy is a naturally good-looking dude.
Here we go.
All right, and. brace yourself. It's another Bigfoot story. But,
speak for yourself, Dave. You
know. No, not Bigfoot. Not Bigfoot. I hear Clooney's going to be playing Bigfoot in the big screen movie.
The only decent movie I saw him in was Dusk Till Dawn.
Yes.
That was great. I agree. I totally agree with you. That was his first and only good movie that he's ever been in.
Yeah. And truth be told, he wasn't that good. It was Selma Hayek who made that movie. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Selma Hayek made that movie.
And Cheech Marin with all the three characters he played.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Every time you have a guy with a whip turn into a rat, you know you're on a good track. A giant
rat. Anything with Cheech Marin, you know.
Yeah.
Because at any given moment, you're just waiting for Cheech Marin to start going, hey, man, you know, hey. Yeah, we got like the vampires over here, man. You know, so every time you see them, you're just waiting for it to kick in, you know. I don't know
Wouldn't
if you remember. You remember Nash Bridges, that movie, that show him and Don Johnson used to do? There was a part in that show, and I can't remember what season, what it was, but it was on the show, and they're walking down the street, and a cat is caught under the car. So they ask Don Johnson, hey, can you get the cat out from under the car? We can't get it. So he tries, can't get it out there. So Cheech Marin gets down there and leans over and goes, here, kitty, 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 here, kitty. And the cat comes out, and Don Johnson looks at him and goes, where have I heard that before? And it was just a great silent shout-out to Cheech and Chong. I mean,
oh my God.
Those guys are great.
Amazing.
I firmly believe Scooby and Shaggy were based off of Cheech and Chong. It was just the way they got into the show.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
Yeah.
So,
those guys were token non-stop, and we watched that show as kids and never picked up on it. And you got to think they were selling it because they went on all those adventures together. None of them had jobs, and they had that big band. So they were probably like bringing kilos over the border. Yeah. And just sell it. Our heroes were actually drug dealers. That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Well, they
and
did
Scooby
it up
Shaggy
in smoke. Why can't they do it?
It
Scooby do, you know?
Does sound like Chong, actually.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Whoa, whoa.
Whoa,
whoa,
whoa. Whoa, whoa, whoa.
So only on this show can we segue from... From Michael
Shaggy
Keaton
Scooby
being the best
drug
Batman,
runner.
Yeah, all the way through to Scooby Doo, doing dope.
Being drug runners.
Of course.
No. Yeah. Listen, you had to be high. If your dog talks to you and it's normal, you're high. You're either high or crazy. So that should have been the first case.
Yeah.
I mean, forget Jason Ghost. You got a talking
dog.
Make money off
that.
When
he did all the murders. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
hey, come on, Scooby.
I always wonder what was going up with Daphne and Fred. You know what I'm saying? I mean, totally platonic, but the guy's wearing an ascot and the same outfit every day. I don't know. Yeah, he wasn't really appealing to. I don't think Daphne was kind of Daphne's cup of tea. So
he
is
was like Velma.
What they go in baseball as the guy who hits 360 every year but only has two home runs. That's what Fred was.
Yeah. Poor Fred.
He's not a power hitter. He's consistent, but not a power hitter.
There's a show called Venture Brothers on Adult Swim. It's one of my favorite cartoons. And one of the characters, the Ventures, he wears the Fred outfit, and I just love it every time he's wearing it because you could see that being Fred as a teenager. Totally dorky.
Yeah.
Totally, you know, everything's about Batman. It's just great to watch that show and see him in that wonderful costume.
And, you know, for years I always thought Selma was the hottest one in the gang, and I kind of
was
a closet thing with me. I was kind of like didn't want to say anything out loud, but now you go to these cons and all the cosplayers are hot Selmas. I'm like, okay, I'm not out of my tree.
Yeah.
I know what I'm doing here.
I want to see Emma Stone play
glasses.
Velma.
Those glasses.
Yes, the glasses. The glasses, man.
Yes, the glasses. Fog them up. They don't know what you're doing. Yeah.
The glasses and the risky business sweater. I mean, what's up with that?
The risky business sweater.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, holy cow. And if you don't know what that is, kids, Google it.
Oh, that Rebecca De Mornay, I swear. Oh, Lord.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord, Rebecca De Mornay.
I was
yeah.
the sole
reason
damn
for
that,
puberty.
Damn that Tom Cruise.
yeah.
And you That's know the fact is with her, she's hotter now than what she was in Risky Business.
Dude, she was amazing
now
in Hands That Rock the Cradle.
Yeah,
oh, yeah,
she was.
That was a great movie.
Yeah, she,
she
oh,
was
yeah.
amazing in that film. And she actually could act.
Mm-hmm.
I was shocked. I was like, oh, my God, she's got talent. So
yeah, yeah. there's something here.
I just saw The Mummy with Tom Cruise. I guess The Mummy refers to his acting. Oh, my God.
yeah.
If anybody could put someone back in the grave, it's Tom Cruise's acting. So
you know, I refuse to have watched that. And then I read about it that they were going to do tie-ins, and they were going to do this whole Avengers-like thing with all the classic monsters. So I was like, dagnabbit, now I'm going to have to watch it. Because
yeah.
And I sat down and watched it, and I just rolled my eyes through the whole thing.
That made the Brandon Fraser Mummy look like an Oscar-nominated film. I was like, my God, that mummy was so amazing.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
It made it look like.
Wasn't
and
it
that's
like
the
Mission
reason
Impossible,
why.
Another Mission Impossible movie, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was basically. And Tom Cruise gets dorkier with each movie. Like, in one moment, he's grabbing a guy's gun. Next moment, he's, like, running away with, like, a little girl. And you're like, what's happening here? What's going on? It's
okay.
the Scientology.
Okay.
It's, like, got control of his brain.
All right. Now, check this out. Me and Misty had this thing we started noticing. Every Tom Cruise movie we watched, the way he ran, you know, the way he runs in every movie. And I just looked at her one day and I said, it can't just be us that's noticing this.
No,
and I went to YouTube and somebody put together a clip where it's Tom Cruise running from his, like, first on-screen appearance all the way up to his most recent movies in one dead run, and he's running. It's the weirdest, most uncomfortable-looking run you've ever seen. It's just so odd.
He runs like a white boy, and he makes white boys look bad. That's how bad he runs.
Wow.
yeah.
Wow.
It's like if Forrest Gump never got the leg braces, there you go, Tom Cruise.
That's his magic shoes.
He's running. I think he's running from reality. That's why it's so bad. He's like, I got to get away from myself. How do I do that?
Top Gun now. I watch Top Gun and I go, what in the hell was rolling through my head when I thought this movie was hitting a lick? This movie is awful. So what I do is I fast forward all the Meg Ryan parts. You just go to all the Meg Ryan parts, watch those, and then you cut the damn thing off because it is. It's horrible. The acting is horrible.
It is.
Everything
Days of Thunder,
horrible,
I always feel like Days of Thunder was the reboot of that. Days of Thunder was the reboot of Top Gun. Let's make it actually interesting, and we'll throw in Michael Rourke. Because that'll make it better.
yeah.
And he runs in that movie. He runs at the end.
Was it Robert Duvall in there also?
Yeah, and he beats him running. Robert Duvall outruns Tom Cruise. That shows you how bad Tom Cruise runs.
Wow, that's intense.
He was like 110 in that film.
That's Duvall, though. Duvall, he's one of those guys up there at the top with Eastwood and De Niro. Duvall is
absolutely
the cape. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
If Duvall outruns me, I'm good with that.
Yeah.
Now, if Ben Affleck outruns me, then I'm a little upset.
Ben Affleck,
God. Talking about Duvall, am I the only one on here that likes secondhand lines?
Oh, no, that was good.
No, I liked that a lot. That was very good.
Oh, yeah,
that was
good.
Great movie.
Yeah, I'm a big Robert Duvall fan.
Oh, yeah.
My
time.
Favorite movie he was in was The Godfather when he played Tom, the attorney. He was so amazing in that.
Love The Godfather.
Yeah.
Godfather is my favorite
movie.
He was
excellent, The Godfather.
Time.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
When he went to go see Waltz in Hollywood and he hits the old, I appreciate the wonderful dinner and the hospitality. But Mr. Corleone demands to hear bad news immediately.
Of all the characters I wanted to be Tom, because Tom was that guy that just no matter what held it together. I mean, he knows they're going to cut a guy's head off and put it in the bed. He's like, I'm good. Let me go get a coffee at Starbucks. It'll be fine.
I've always been a big Al Pacino fan, honestly.
Yeah,
I've always loved
Pacino's
Pacino.
Good.
He's amazing. Great.
Pacino is.
Think Devil's Advocate.
I was about to say that. Yeah.
It's very underrated film.
Movie.
It's one of his best performances. ever. It's sad because the films he's been in of late have been terrible, and he's such an amazing actor.
Right.
When you're Al Pacino and you're in an Adam Sandler film, you know the comet is going to be hitting the planet at some point soon.
That movie was unholy. It was so bad you had to watch it just to appreciate how bad it was.
And who can forget Scent of a Woman?
Oh,
yeah,
phenomenal.
Now that was excellent.
Yes.
Hoo-wah! Hoo-wah!
Yeah.
Al Pacino is just amazing. Al, his ultimate film, How to Beat Us. Do you understand?
You know what? Say hello to my little friend.
That's actually how I proposed to my wife.
Yes.
It didn't go over well.
Oh, gosh.
You know what you need? You need a job. Maybe go help blind kids, lepers.
Yeah.
I had to hit the line at work tonight with the, I always tell the truth, even when I lie. Everyone's looking at me like, Jesus, get this guy out of here. But it's funny, you know, Sam Elliott, and I'm sure a couple of you heard me talk about the Sam Elliott effect. What is the Sam Elliott effect? Glad you asked. The Sam Elliott effect is when you...
Is it like the Mandela effect, Dave? Come on.
No, it's even better. Sam Elliott effect is when you come home and find your wife in bed with Sam Elliott, and you just kind of stand there and go, dude,
it's Sam Elliott.
Sam Elliott.
Yeah.
It doesn't bother you because it's Sam Elliott. You know what I mean?
My favorite Sam Elliott film is Roadhouse. I don't care about Patrick Swayze in that film. It's Sam Elliott. Sam Elliott owns that film.
So yes. Yep.
He's amazing. He's absolutely amazing.
That's another movie.
Beat the crap
you can condense it down to about 30 minutes because you just watched the Sam Elliott parts. He also outdid Nick Cage in the Ghost Rider movie, too, because I thought he was fantastic.
Totally.
I wish he was
the Ghost Rider.
The only thing
Ghost Rider almost made Batman and Robin watchable.
The only thing about Roadhouse is I couldn't suspend disbelief because Terry Funk was in it, and Terry Funk would have beat up everybody in the film.
Oh, no doubt. He got beat up so easy.
I mean, he got the Chip and Dale dancer beating up the wrestler. How did that happen?
He'll get his cowboy boots on too while doing it.
Yeah.
Did you know Terry Funk was the guy that he choreographed a scene with Rocky and Tommy Gunn? In Rocky V.
Really?
The street fight scene?
I did not know
that. Stallone flew him in to choreograph that fight.
I don't know if I'd put that on my resume or not.
Yeah, Rocky V, yeah.
I might leave that one off.
The scene was great, but the movie sucked.
Yeah.
One of my favorite all-time street fights, though, has got to be with Roddy Piper in the movie They Live.
Absolutely. Hands down, the best street fight scene ever.
That went for 20 minutes. 20 minutes.
I know, it was great.
I thought they were going Broadway. I thought they were going to the draw or something.
I know, right?
That Roddy Piper line has become the motto of my life. The two things I do well is kick butt and chew bubble gum, and I'm all out of bubble gum. Having Roddy Piper say that was literal heaven.
Well, when he's sitting there, he's just sitting there popping him in the alley. Put on the glasses. Put them on. Like, oh God.
And when you saw the movie, that was classic Piper. That was classic Piper.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
That was Terror Comes to Frogtown Piper.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
They made two of those, by the way. They made two of those. Terror Comes to Frogtown. There was a sequel. So for those who haven't seen the first, there's actually a second.
Oh.
Even the movie Body Slam with him and Dirk Benedict, who was also in the A-Team.
Yeah.
Wasn't Tonga Kid in that, too?
He was his tag team partner,
Roddy's tag team partner, Tonga Kid.
Roddy Piper was by far my favorite wrestler besides Ultimate Warrior. I got the Ultimate Warrior fight Andre the Giant, which lasted all of 10 minutes. That was the main event. He ran in the ring, shook the ropes, knocked Andre the Giant down, which we all knew was not possible, and then ran out of the ring. I was like, wow, we spent $40 for a ticket. That's awesome.
That was neat. Yeah.
Yeah. I said that's inconceivable.
Yeah. It's.
That's what that guy's talking about, The Princess Bride. He can't get past that fight. He's like, it's inconceivable. I can't. I'm just scarred for life.
Princess Bride was great.
My wife would have called off the wedding. I wanted the preacher to start off the sermon by going, Mawaj, that holy ceremony. But my wife said she wouldn't marry me.
I'm glad you didn't get the pastor from Spaceballs to do it.
I would have loved that too. Do you have the ring? Where's the ring? That guy was so Batman. It was awesome. Do you have the ring? All right, we're getting married. Let's do this. Come on, right now.
Spaceballs is another one that should have won an Oscar. I mean, it just
Mel Brooks
up there with Tommy
is,
Boy.
For me, Mel Brooks is the ultimate comedic genius because nobody could have made a film like Blazing Saddles and got away with it. And to this day, you'll never see that. No one could have watched it. It would just offend it. Liberals' heads would explode in the first 15. They would get past the theme song and just entire audiences would explode. But no one gets the fact that it's the biggest, black
like
eye
Bimbo.
To white people. It makes fun of white people. It's about making fun of white people. And every line of that film is literal comedy gold. There's not a single, up to the credits, it's like every line, the point where they get in a limo and drive off, is absolute comedy gold. So.
Oh, History of the World Part 1 is another one. It's always a go-to.
Yeah.
I mean,
Young Frankenstein.
Young Frankenstein. I'm sorry.
Oh,
I don't know how many times I got to hit the putting on the wits. I mean,
did y'all ever see, you know, when Steve Jobs was still alive and they had, what was his name, Steve Ballmer over at Microsoft, and he was trying so hard to be Steve Jobs and look like the cool kid, and he would come out there and do the Windows thing, and he was running all around stage, and he didn't understand what made Steve Jobs cool, so he was just running all over the stage. Well, somebody put on YouTube, they made it all black and white, and they had something on the rips by
it. Oh, that's awesome.
Similar.
That's awesome. Did you guys know that the woman's name, what was her name? Cloris Leachman's name, I think it's Fabruka. I think if I'm not mistaken, I think that is glue in German, and that's why the horses react. I think I'm correct that when I saw it behind
glue.
The scenes. Because I was wondering why.
Oh, that's funny.
You know, you thought it was something dirty because, you know, why is they reacting to Fabruka? But I think it's like glue or something in Germany, and the horse will react to that.
That reminds me of Val Kilmer in Top Secret when he's shooing off the bikes. And he's going, yah, yah. And they're checking off when he's in Germany.
That is, I wish more people would see that film. That is Val Kilmer's greatest film, is Top Secret.
Yes.
I love that movie. It's amazing.
That's awesome.
You know, I've never been a real big Val Kilmer guy, but I will say this. The movie where he played John Holmes and then Tombstone, he killed it as Doc Holliday.
Oh, Tombstone,
Holliday.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Oh,
yeah,
he killed it as Doc Holliday.
He destroyed
it. Yeah, he was
Doc Holliday.
Holliday,
man.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, yeah.
I should have. You're right. Tombstone is an amazing movie, and he really nailed. I think that whole cast nailed Tombstone.
Sam Elliott also.
Yeah,
so.
Sam Elliott was bad.
Johnny
Ringo. Yeah, he was bad news in that one. Yeah.
The Elliott
Bill Paxton.
Again.
Yeah, everybody was Tombstone, man.
I think George Clooney was in there as well. The horses.
And what? Oh yeah, Johnny Ringo, the guy that played Reese. Terminator, he was in it.
Yeah.
What's his name? Michael Bean.
Michael Bean. Yep.
Michael Bean. Yeah. Billy Bob Thornton was in it also. He was the guy that Kurt Russell beat up.
Yep. Because he was the car dealer.
Mm-hmm.
Yo, funny thing
about
Michael
ever
Bean.
Seen
we was at a show, and Michael Bean walked by my table, and looked at my book and said, "Man, is this a Western?" And I said, "Well, it's kind of a Western horror type thing." And he goes, "You know, I love Westerns, man." And me and him get to talking about, you know, the book and Westerns and everything. Next thing you know, the guy's pulling, you know, money out of his pocket, and I'm like, no, you don't have to do that. I'm signing the book. I'm like, here's my book. Here's my truck keys. Here's my wallet. There's nothing on the cards.
Here's my wife.
Yeah. The count. I mean, I was totally blown away. I mean, you know, it's some of those movies that are just totally iconic, especially, you know, like Mr. Rossman was speaking earlier about coming up in the 70s and 80s. There are certain movies, and I've talked about it here recently, who in the last 3 years I've shook hands with Captain Kirk, Batman and Robin, Flash Gordon, Ric Flair, Greg Valentine. I mean, you know, the list of people that go on. I mean, we all talk about Game of Thrones and Walking Dead now and all that. But all the stuff that was going on back in the 70s and 80s, Lee Majors. I mean, here I am. I'm shaking hands with Lee Majors month before last. And I'm like, man, and you guys have heard me say it. If I could just get in the time machine and go back to my 8-year-old self and say, dude, stay cool, because you're going to be shaking hands with that guy 40 years from now. It's just
awesome.
Mind-blowing what you could do. And, you know, going back there and seeing these home shows and everything, I mean,
yeah.
Tombstone's one of those movies that, like I said, everybody's in it, and it was such a great film. So when you actually get to meet somebody that was in that movie, man, it's just an absolute, just kind of blows you away. You get one of those fangasms for a moment. But yeah, it was really cool meeting Michael Biehn and having that experience.
That's really cool.
Have
you guys ever seen Silverado?
Yeah,
Silverado, yeah.
Great.
With Kevin Kline and Dan Glover. Yeah.
I've got to tell you all this, though. Talking about meeting somebody at a con, you know, and funny stories about that. I was at a con one time, and this is, I'm going to tell a story on the Crippler, Brett Watson, when he was a little bit younger. And he was still in high school, you know. And he went with me to a big con, and I let him go walk around. I was at the table. He comes back to my table just wide as a ghost. You know, I said, "What's wrong with you?" He goes, "Well, I was walking around over there, and somebody kept hollering at me and hollering, 'Slacker.'" He goes, "I turn around and look, and I didn't know who it was. And then I walk a few steps, and all of a sudden, 'Stop, you slacker.'" And then he started saying what I was wearing, so I knew he talked about me. He said, so I started to get mad. And I turned around and looked. And it was the actor who played Principal Strickland in Back to the Future.
Nice.
You know, that's
what
he was,
cool.
You know, he used to call everybody slacker.
Yeah.
Brett goes over and starts walking over, and he looks up above him, and the guy's just smiling at him, and the guy was just picking on him, and Brett's like, "Oh, what?" He goes over and says, Dad. You know, I've been called a slacker by all kind of teachers, but now I can say I've been called a slacker by the best.
It was great. That's awesome. Oh, man.
Oh,
and that's
Lord.
The best thing about these cons, though, and that's why I try to tell everybody about these shows, you know, because I have a lot of people come up and ask, you know, "Oh, do you have to dress up for it?" Or, "Oh, I don't like comic books." I'm like, guys,
yeah.
You just don't get it. If you go to a sports, as much as I am in the sports and everything, you know, if you go to a hockey game and you're wearing the wrong jersey, man, folks will throw stuff at you. You know, they'll pour beer in your seat when you get up. You know, there's all sorts of awful things that will happen to you at sporting events. But yet cons, when you go there, everybody is cool, you know. And
yes.
It
brings everybody together.
Who you are. Yeah, if
you know.
If you're 7 feet tall and dressed up like an Ewok, it's okay. If you're 4 foot tall and dressed up like, you know, a Bigfoot, it's okay. You know, everybody is cool. And
you forgot Anna Nicole, Dave. Anna Nicole.
If everybody's dressed up like
Anna
Nicole, it's okay.
Yeah.
And don't
Except
you get on Bigfoot now, Dave. Watch out.
It all circles,
you know,
back to Bigfoot for Atwill.
It all comes back
to Rossman. He gave me a pretty banging idea when I was driving to the house, and he doesn't even know it, but he inspired me earlier. You know, in the book business, us horror writers, it's a hard gig, man. You know, because we don't make no money. Got to work 60
right.
hours a week. But he said sparkle vampires, and all of a sudden I said, well, where's all the money at in writing? It's in romance novels. So if I had a sparkle vampire and a Bigfoot in a romance novel.
Ship it. That sounds good. I think you should do it.
That's amazing.
I get Celine Dion to sing the soundtrack.
There you go.
I mean, might be a little stretch. But the two of them have a love triangle. And who do they have a love triangle with? Anna Nicole Smith.
There you go. There you go. That's it. That's money.
Yes.
That's money right there.
And just like Tormund say in Game of Thrones, they get together and have monster babies.
Yeah. That's called 50 Shades of Yeti.
Yeah.
Called 50 Shades of Yeti.
Get it on with your aunt and it's okay. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I thought Anna Nicole was Bigfoot. I just thought she was really good at shaving.
See, we've been saying that for the last few weeks, haven't we, Dave?
Yes. Yes.
We thought
we've been going all over that one.
There are certain ones I could. Yeah, there are ones that I could digest, and Lord knows if you've listened to the last 4 weeks of shows, there are certain ones I could digest, and there are certain ones I can't. And by God,
oh, we know.
But I do have my glow sticks. I'm staying out here in the yard and having a great time on the show tonight. But I do have my glow stick in the event that I'm attacked by any Bigfoot that might be upset at my last couple comments.
Don't forget your Reese's Pieces, too. They like candy.
Right. Right.
Okay.
But now, listen here. The men in black have already visited me today, and they know about this new footage that is going to go viral about Bigfoot. And I'm going to let
But Don, that was the IRS that was coming to you.
Yeah.
That's what your hope was witnesses, John.
Look into the light, Dr. John.
They were Jehovah's Witnesses, John. I keep telling you that. They're not men in black.
You'll see.
You know, if the men in black want to get some stuff done, they should hire Jehovah's Witnesses. Could you imagine that? People would really be scared. No one would ever answer the letter.
Absolutely. That's true.
Hey, Ron, you can beat them. Ron, I can see it now. You can beat them all up like Robert Stack in Airplane. At the terminal.
I love that scene.
Latter-day Saints, Jehovah's Witness.
Yep. Flower from Hare Krishna.
Yeah, them too.
Hold to yourself.
We tried to replicate that at FlorenceCon. We tried to replicate that at FlorenceCon with Joker.
Too,
yeah. We needed more heroes. I wanted to like have people like lining up with like weapons, you know, like they're getting ready to go in there, but we didn't have enough people. Yeah. But
was great.
Family Guy does a great takeoff on that with Peter trying to get to the bathroom. He's walking the hall and he gets attacked by all the people who are like selling cookies for their daughters and gives them. Hilarious. It's hilarious. It's like right out of the movie. The guy's a genius who writes Family Guy. The man is a literal comic genius.
Yeah, that's true. Love Family Guy.
Yeah, there's something definitely wrong with Seth MacFarlane, but it's a good kind of wrong.
It's a good kind of wrong. Yeah, it's a very good kind of wrong. So,
Mr. Herbert.
Oh yeah.
I
my
love
favorite
this
is his Bruce.
I
Bruce
was also good. I know. I know. That was Glenn's dog. I know.
You about the baby that shot his mom? I knew.
Stop talking about that Bigfoot.
One of the best scenes is when he sings, "I'll have the time of my life" to Chris. I don't know if you've seen the episode, and he just sings that song, and it's just beautiful. It's just absolutely beautiful.
Awesome. Yeah.
There's an episode with Dan Aykroyd and Chevy Chase. They do a setting up on Spies Like Us. And Stewie, they say, anything weird happening in your town? And Stewie says, well, there's a pedophile in our town, but he's pretty funny, so nobody really cares about it. And I was like, somebody finally addressed it. That's awesome.
And they made Obi-Wan Kenobi in their Star Wars ones.
Oh, that was great with the lightsaber. You came to the nick of time.
Yeah. Yeah, the Star Wars ones. And, you know, what's funny is that after you watch that, you can't watch Star Wars again. You watch it, and all you can think about is, you know, you look for a couch and a compactor and everything. You're like, oh, come on, I need to watch the real thing now.
And Peter breaks the fourth wall. He looks at the chicken dressed as Boba Fett, and he goes, I see what they did there. The chicken's Boba Fett.
I love when the scene where Luke in Star Wars says to Han Solo, "You don't believe in anything." I've always thought that is the most bratty thing he said, and I love when Peter says back to him, "Oh, you mean that religion you just learned about 5 minutes ago? Is that what we're talking about?" Luke was the first Jehovah's Witness, people.
Peter,
are you not getting this?
When he says, "Great shot, kid. Don't get penis-y."
Yeah. That's great. Everything about that episode is great. So,
oh, Lord.
The whole thing with Stewie as Darth Vader. And, we can just get an apartment and hang out like a couple guys. When he's communicating to Luke, it looks like Darth Vader's like, "Oh, I'm sorry, I was trying to call Luke Jones or something." So, how are you doing? Great.
And then when they got Brian playing Chewbacca, and Peter says, "Chewbacca, you got to look after the princess." And he goes, "You mean like this right here?" "No, I don't mean like that." I'll never forget when we were watching, and Rob, of course, started watching Family Guy. And it goes back to the whole parenting thing. For any of us who have been parents, we've had those moments where we're going, are we showing our kids too much? Or are we doing the right thing here to where if they're going to learn the bad stuff, I want them to learn it from me. You know what I mean? Just so you can kind of corral it, the best you can.
To that.
So Rob's watching it, and I know Dale, she was not happy at all about him watching Family Guy. And this was back, I think he's about 10, 11 years old, and 10, 11 year olds now know more than I do. But nevertheless, we're not willing to admit that. So they're showing the one when Peter was thinking about when he first met Lois. And I don't want to laugh at Family Guy with Rob in the room because, I'm thinking, okay, maybe he'll take it wrong and say, okay, it's all right for me to watch this 24 hours a day. So when Peter walks up and he sees Lois getting out of the pool and he's all taken aback with her beauty, and he walks up and he goes, and he's the towel boy, and he says, "Hi, my name's Towel. Would you like a dry Peter?" My drink went everywhere. I fell out, and that's when I totally surrendered to Family Guy. And I says, "Yeah, that's." And then when Cleveland came out, I'm sorry. I still to this day I walk around going, "That's just nasty."
Oh man.
My favorite, I can't watch the episode because I literally every time I make a fool of myself is when Peter has the bad breath and he's driving in the car with Megan and does the hidey hidey ho thing and she has to bail from the car. I can't watch that without hurting myself. It's just so great. Hidey 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 ho.
I know.
Cleveland hits the... No. And he comes crashing out, and you hear Brian going, "Cleveland, I'm sorry about that. It's not your fault, Brian. You're a dog."
I like when the bear comes out and says, "I don't get it." He falls out. He goes,
"That was funny.
I don't get it."
That whole show, all that stuff, but it's genius. You know what I mean? And he made a good point on one of his interviews. He was talking about take a delicate topic and put it in the song, and for some reason everybody forgives you. And he was talking about the AIDS song and the bag of weed song and all that, how if you take something touchy but you put it into a comedic song, it's like, oh, it's okay, they're singing about that.
Oh, yeah.
And that
bag, and what fam-
that bag of
what
weed
family-
song, I'm sorry. I find myself walking around singing that thing by accident. You know what I mean?
Seth has such a... Did you ever see Peter do Shaboopy when he was playing with the Patriots? They did the whole Shaboopy thing? I'm a huge Music Man fan. I'm like, oh, my God. But Seth MacFarlane is a huge Show Tunes fan. So to see him put that in there and do it so falsely. And then the cutaways to... I can't think of the name now. What he always does... the cutaways, the hee-haw cutaways, to what's the country with the singer's song he cuts to? From,
oh, man.
You guys remember he was always on hee-haw?
Yeah.
Roy?
No. God, it wasn't Buck Owens. It was
no.
Grandpa Jones?
Roy Owens? Roy?
No.
Okay, there goes the big trivia word for tonight.
This is bad because I actually like him. I like him. I like him as a singer.
Gosh,
at one
totally
point,
leave
God
me. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, at one time, God tells him to leave him alone. He keeps cutting to him. Mr. Conway Twitty. Mr. Conway Twitty.
That's it. Yep.
Thank God for Google. Mr. Conway, and when he comes out, I love that. And the two vaudeville guys that always, like, break in all of a sudden. And, like, they do that, their bit, and in the end, Stewie finally shoots them and goes, okay, enough, they're done, they're gone.
Well, when Peter and Quagmire got together and started doing that Simon and Garfunkel thing with the
I can't poop in straight places. Did you ever put butter on a Pop-Tart? It's so freaking good.
The whole Pop-Tart song actually almost like a strange places. I'm listening to the song and I'm just kind of I'm overwhelmed with guilt because I'm like, okay, I'm not the only guy that feels this way about pooping in public places. It's like, I can't do it, man.
Every song they sang was amazing. The Florida song, all of them were phenomenal. So, and I love
the
end.
Pop tart, though.
I want that to be my ringtone. I'm actually going to make that my ringtone.
Every time I go to get a Pop tart out of the cabinet. Yeah, sorry. And I walk up to my son, or if my son gets one, every time we eat a Pop-Tart, we got to walk by one another and go, hey, you ever put butter on a Pop-Tart? So freaking good.
So freaking good.
And then the song kicks in.
Yep. Have you ever seen Seth in Robot Chicken do the Emperor, voice the Emperor?
Oh, Jesus.
Yes.
Robot Chicken? I'm sorry.
The escalator scene...
Oh,
is the
God.
Greatest moment in Robot Chicken where it's like Emperor, Stormtrooper, blah, 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 blah. And he starts the whole Dick Cheney thing. Yeah. Go F yourself. And at the end, after you've got all that laughter in, here comes the Death Star drone going, I mean, it's just, who thinks of those things? How much pot do you have to smoke to go, I'm going to have the Death Star droid go down an escalator and go completely like ghetto. What's up?
Robot chicken stuff is genius. And having Breckenmeyer do the Boba Fett voice, and what's funny about that is that that's actually Breckenmeyer's voice.
Yeah.
You know, so when he's out there going, you know, hey, oh, man, you made me drink my spill, you know, that's Breckenmeyer's voice, you know.
He makes Boba Fett what Boba Fett should be. The whole scene where he's got Han and Carbonite, and he's like, oh,
yes.
Get your hands out. Like you're begging for some Boba. I was like, yes, this is awesome.
He's down there in the Sarlacc. He's like, Jabba says, ooh, you too badass for me. Old big fat Chewbacca burning in hell.
When he's got two, he tells
go out like a dweeb. Yeah.
I got two lightsabers and whoa, look at this. And are you crying, man? No, man, no. Great.
The best one
That's
out of
TV.
All those, though, was when they had Max Rebo, that little blue elephant guy in the band. When he was talking about
his greatest hits.
I got to make it to the gig, man. I've been walking through the desert, man. My feet be killing me, man. He's only walked like 10 paces.
When they do his greatest hits, I'm not a blue elephant. I'm still not a blue elephant. Stop calling me a blue elephant. I want to buy that album.
The piano player
really
dead, the singing woman dead. Yeah. That one is, I don't know how they put it together because I'd have been – I'd have been in tears the whole time. And, you know, they do everything with that stop motion.
Yeah.
I'd get nothing done.
Yeah.
I mean, I would be
laughing.
The least productive guy. And he walks by the Sarlacc, and he's, of course, I won't say it on the show, but he says, you know, what is that there? And of course, he, you know, names a particular part of the body and everything. And then you hear Boba Fett in the bottom, and he says, like, I'll give you a million space bucks if you can throw me a rope. And he looks right at the rope and goes, ain't a rope up here, man. I got to get it. You dreaming, man.
Have you seen the DC specials where they kind of just completely destroy Aquaman? I love that. I love it. It's just amazing.
Still, that old skit where they do when they got Cobra Commander, Lex Luthor, Skeletor,
and
I think Mumra in the car.
It's common courtesy.
Yeah. And Skeletor hotboxes all of them. I mean,
smell the stench of Skeletor's breakfast burrito.
Oh, man.
And here we are. And we're grown men, grandparents, and just sitting there falling out of the chair laughing at this. You know,
and my kids don't get it. They're like, who is the blue guy? Is he a Smurf? That's gone bad? What is going on here?
Like,
T-Man.
You just don't get it. Yeah.
Yeah. Who's the Chippendale guy with the sword? What's up with that?
Yeah.
He's Magic Mike with a sword. That's what He-Man is, Magic Mike with a sword.
Yeah, pretty much.
That stuff's awesome. And I got to hand it to those guys. I mean, the creativity behind it, it's taken that step. And, you gotta stand there and just kind of say, hey, man, hats off to these guys for doing what they do.
Yeah.
It might be crazy.
Absolutely.
But the amount of thought and creativity goes behind it. I said, for them to be able to actually get it out there on the first place, because I'd be lost. I would be absolutely useless because I'd be laughing the whole time. I would get nothing done.
Well, the fact they're doing stop motion in a world of CGI and taking the time to
incredible.
Make that to me is just and then adding the humor on top of that and keeping it fresh and the contemporary is it's amazing. No one's going to ever be able to copy that. It's going to go down in history as far as where it comes to entertainment as probably one of the most innovative shows out there. I think it's actually won us several Emmys too.
I believe you're right.
I love it.
So
I can't. You know, the bad news is they only run like 15 minutes. So they run. You know, you're getting into it, and then all of a sudden it's like cutting off. You're just like the biggest letdown on the planet.
Yeah. But then you get to watch Rick and Morty, so that makes life better.
God. Pickle Rick.
My son's hooked on that.
Rick and Morty is – I wish I could write as well as the writers of Rick and Morty. I have never seen such a perfect blend of comedy, in-your-face philosophy, in-your-face kind of, you know, here's the way life is, and then just the whole – there's an underlying soul to it as they're developing the Rick character that – it's just amazing. You're totally engaged, and they're able to parody things so well. It's definitely on the lines of Airplane and Mel Brooks and the way they're able to so effectively parody and not, like, reduce it to some just goofy thing. It's really, really well done. So
that's
one of my favorite shows.
Did you see the one where they parodied Needful Things?
Oh, that was so good. And then they got the steroids and sort of beating people up. It was awesome.
That one in Me Seeks kills me. And
the floating heads. Show me what you got. And they do got to get Swifty. That's another ringtone coming up.
Yeah, Rob had Pickle Rick on the other night where he turned himself into a pickle to escape prison.
To avoid therapy.
I mean,
how much?
Oh, God.
How many of us would do that to avoid, you know, going someplace with the spouse and the kids, turn myself into a pickle?
Yeah. I mean, that was perfect. And the minute he yelled, Pickle Rick.
I mean, history was made. The history was made at that moment with the shot heard around the world. Pickle Rick! So, but they have done The Needful Things was fantastic. They did one on the whole thing they did with the Mad Max kind of spin off this year with the post-apocalyptic world. The guy in the helmet takes his helmet off and he's got like a mustache and he's preoccupied with the mustache and he's afraid that, you know, that's bother. I mean, just everything about that, it's amazing. And that, and like I said, the one of my favorites is the Unity one where he has Unity, the girl who possesses an entire species, entire planets, and he's like hooking up with her and hooking, you know, I don't want anybody to judge, but can you get me a giraffe? And I'm like, oh, that's Rick. It's genius. It's genius.
And here we are, a bunch of grown men. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's must-see TV. I'm not watching once upon a time.
Yes. And I'm sorry, if you can't laugh at the stuff, and I've heard people say over and over, you know, it's like, you know, even with Beavis and Butthead, it's like, I can't believe you watch that. I says, I can't believe you don't, because sooner or later, you got to laugh. And I'm sorry if it might be at the expense of another person, but sooner or later, and I've always said, if you can crack on yourself, you can crack on anybody.
Yeah,
and
if you can't laugh at yourself, you can't laugh at anything.
Yeah, and, you know, you just got to lighten up. And there was nothing funnier. What made Beavis and Butthead funny was when somebody said, what are you guys, nuts? And you go, he said nuts. I'm sorry. Every one of us has thought that from one time or another when the guy says it to us. You know, or you're in gym class and the gym teacher says, okay, y'all hold the balls.
She says, balls. He said balls.
I mean, if you can't laugh at that, go crawl under a rock. You know what I mean? Or go hunt Bigfoot or something. You know,
it's really funny that we're becoming a bunch of crybabies, and yet if you watch TV, TV's becoming more in your face while society's becoming less attracted to it,
more,
and yet these shows are doing well, which tells you that the majority is not these crybabies who everything offends, have to tear down statues and all that to make themselves feel better. But it's actually the majority of us are like, you know what? We live normal lives. We get up, we do our job, we come home, we watch Rick and Morty, we spend some time with the wife, you know, and that or the family, and we just move on, and we're not watching the news going, what's the next tweet that's going to send me into trigger mode? Or, you know, don't let me have any kind of mansplaining, or it's sad. And it goes back to the fact that the greatest, most profound two statements in the history of man are, I have seen the enemy, and it is us, Pogo, and then misery loves company. And the reason why political correctness has become a thing is because miserable people don't want to be miserable alone, so they want you to be miserable with them, and then they feel some validation.
Right.
And the inmates are running the asylum right now. It's sad. It's absolutely sad.
It is.
So that's
I on a wrestling tip. If you look at Rocky Maivia and Stunning Steve Austin, they weren't hitting a lick when they were doing that. But when they turn into The Rock, and The Rock come in with the people's eyebrow and the people's elbow, and it doesn't matter what he's doing. And you hear the glass breaking, and here comes Stone Cold, and he's beating the hell out of the boss. Guess what? There's not one of us who's ever thought about beating up our boss, as much as I hate to admit it.
Yeah.
You know.
Hey, my boss is a nice guy.
And you still
you're the boss.
Okay,
I'm on boss.
Okay, wait a minute. What's that got to do with being miserable and misery loves company? I don't get it. I mean, wait a minute. Hold up. I mean,
have you seen a Rock film? That's misery. If you ever watched set through an entire Rock film, you're in misery.
The guy's making more money than all of us. Come on. He's making more money than all of us. He's doing something right. I mean.
Yeah, unfortunately, The Rock, as much as I like him as a wrestler, whenever he's acting in a film, it's kind of like, okay, let's
It's like watching a dog lick peanut butter off the roof of its mouth. It's just that painful.
Yeah.
Oh, come
on.
Come on.
Hey.
It's George Cooney.
He's getting the checks, man. I mean, he's doing
something
right.
Yeah.
I mean,
there's a lot of money to be made in stupid.
Yeah, if I could, you know, If I could do what he does, oh, God bless him, man. I mean, shoot. But no, I'm saying is, I mean, you're right, Ron, about Misery Loves Company. I mean, the world's really messed up right now, and there's so many things that are trying to divide us and make us look weak, and everything, and it's just and really, it's like you said, it's not most of us, you know, because most of us, we just live life every day, and you know, all we see is all this propaganda on TV, and you know, trying to make us divide each other, hate each other, and start riots and protests, and in reality, we're all one and the same. You know what I mean? And it's just
you're 100% right.
People just want control. That's all it is. People just want control over us.
The zombie genre came up the idea of it was, I think, born from capitalism that and materialism, where people would just follow whatever trend was going on. It was kind of a symbol or a statement on that. And you look at, I think the reason why zombie movies terrify me is because every day I go on Facebook and they're there. It's just amazing how quickly people flow to whatever they hear and react to whatever they hear. And each generation that's coming up is becoming worse and worse. And nobody's able to think for themselves anymore. So, you know, it goes back to this idea that, and I think it's because we have such a glut of information. Information is good. Knowledge is always power. But the problem is you have to discern. And people forget about the discerning part. Free speech is great, but you don't want to yell fire in a crowded theater. And what's happened is the people that before the internet had no voice and with good reason now are the most powerful voices on the internet. And so they're actually now swaying public opinion. They're actually creating public opinion. And it's frightening because there are people that in any other situation you go, oh, it's that guy again. Let me go. You know, you're at a party. Let me go get a drink at the punch bowl. We can't escape that now. The punch bowl is no longer existent. And you know, we're talking earlier about constant cosplay in a family. It really bothers me because now it's infiltrated its way into the cosplay world, which was a place to escape from that. And I see we posted the video of the whole Joker thing, and I got to tell you, I was amazed at some of the just awful, vulgar comments that people made, criticizing, you know, this person, that person, and I'm like, now feel validated? Do you feel like you've accomplished something? Is your life that horrible that you have to take something that was meant and fun and make something nasty of it? But that's the course we're heading down. It's sad. That's why we need, to go to Dave's point, that's why we need Rick and Morty's. We need more Rick and Morty's. We need more South Parks. We need more Family Guys because those are the people that are keeping us from falling into that whole everything in the world offends me. And
And I mean, just the other day, man, I saw an advertisement about this orange latte coffee, right? Pumpkin latte with the whipped
pumpkin
cream
spot.
Saying it was racist. Oh. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me.
What, the Oompa Loompas? How is orange to Oompa Loompas? There's an Oompa Loompa movie.
The Lorax.
Yeah. Hey, Stray,
Willy Wonka's leading
it. Thing about it today on the news on Fox, they did a huge thing today about that, about what you were talking about the pumpkin spice latte being racist, and people were triggered all over the place.
This is where I'm telling you, and Rob goes to your point. So we've got North Korea with nuclear weapons. We've got the Middle East in chaos. The economy's kind of – but let's focus on the fact that pumpkin spice might be racist.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. People say I'm a conspiracy theorist when I say that. I'm like, really? Because I think the conspiracy is that everything's going well, not the fact that, you know, everyone's trying to distract you from – it's like the Wizard of Oz, paying no attention to the man behind the curtain. So the only people who are going to be offended by pumpkin spice who are orange is Donald Trump and Oompa Loompas. And I think Trump handled himself in the Palumpas. They got Willy Wonka, so they're set.
All right, gentlemen, we have 53 seconds left. I've got to say two things. First of all, you heard me at the door. The Men in Black showed up. Anna Nicole and Bigfoot were with them, and they said that we have done more to discourage people from believing in either one of them than anyone else, so they're not going to come get us. Isn't that great?
That's good news.
Wonderful.
And number two, And number two, with 30 seconds left, thank you so much, Ron Rossman. Thank you so much, Papa Stroh Maestro, Dave Atwell. I didn't have a heart attack.
Sir.
Greg Bo Watson, you folks are the best. We will see you next week on Comic-Con Stars. Take care and have a great week, okay?
Outstanding.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rossman. Have a good night.
Thank you. Thank you, Ron. It was a pleasure, brother.
Pleasure was all mine.
Talk to you soon, Ron.
Take care. Yep.
Okay, no British chick yet.